Welcome to Leadership Unlocked, an interview-style podcast providing insights on how to lead people. Proudly brought to you by Human Interactions Australia. Welcome to Leadership Unlocked. We're at episode 13, which is extremely exciting for us. And this week, we are interviewing Torin Minutillo from all the way from Perth. He couldn't come and see me live, of course. So just kidding. So welcome, Torin.
Thanks, Craig. It's a pleasure to be here, and thanks for the opportunity.
Our pleasure. Our absolute pleasure. So tell us a little bit about you. You get to do a two-minute pitch. About you and what you're trying to do these days.
Cool. Yeah, so my two-minute pitch is that I'm a 32-year veteran of business. Started off small and sort of slowly grown as I've gone through my journey. And I've got a real estate business in the background that I manage and run and have done for, I've been in that industry for 20 odd years, had a lot of smaller businesses prior to that. And in the last 5 years, or sort of more so, 4 years actually doing the work, is evolving to become a business coach and helping other business owners weave their way through their journey. My focus is really on helping people understand human behavior and how that impacts what we do and how we show up and how we get our results from that. That's sort of the niche and the area that I'm working in, which sort of couples in with my experience around business. But I think the focus for me and what I want to do going forward more so is just, help business owners go through the struggles. And in particular, business owners who are sort of in that middle, after their middle stage of their life, so it's from 40 through to 50, it's an interesting age, and it's an area where I got tripped up a bit in my business journey. And I think it's one that it's worth, looking into the human behavior around what happens to us as business leaders and owners, and how do we weave our way through it. So that's sort of the area that I like to work with. And just enjoying the whole experience. This is my fourth year of actually coaching other business owners. That's going really well. And the real estate company is going really well as well. So life's good.
What you talk about this 40-year-old onwards, 42, 43-year-old onwards, it is an interesting time. I've seen it certainly through the family business sector where owners are looking to an exit strategy, not sure what that might be. In a family business sector, they often rely on their sons or daughters coming through. Yeah. They think they're going to take it over. And then there's this time where they find out that they're not going to take it over. And I think that accentuates the issue for these people in their 40s, late 40s. Well, what was your experience? What happened for you in that space?
For me, mine was just more circumstances in that, like a lot of business owners, you sort of trip over your shoelaces a little bit and just try and weave your pathway forward without. So I wasn't an academic, so I didn't have any sort of formal degrees or anything like that. I just got into small business and then weave my way from there. When I was 44, I ran into the global financial crisis in 2008. Was going pretty good, had built up, assets, multiple properties, doing well, which by whatever measure you want to think, certainly from my measure, I was going well and life was good. But probably what I understood on reflection is that I didn't really have a really solid foundation to what I was building, and that that coupled up with the middle of my life, kids in private schools, mortgages. And then all of a sudden there was a storm that came and I wasn't really ready for it. And I think what I reflected on later, that it wasn't really the GFC, and that's the point I want to make here, it wasn't really the GFC. It was more that I was traveling through an area of my life where I had, 18 years business experience at that point, but I still found I was struggling through it and I couldn't understand why I was doing that. And I ended up losing quite a few zeros through that process and really had to reassess of where I was going. Fast forward where I'm at now, which is in, completely different place, but the reflection is that it was really about my psychological development of where I was as a human being through those challenges, which I wasn't attuned to. So what I'm doing now is to really understand and go back and work with business owners who are traveling through this period of their life, because it's generally, if you get into that age group, you've got, you know, 5, 10, 15 years of experience if you've chosen the entrepreneurial pathway as a, you know, once you decide what you're going to do in your career and your life. And, you know, generally your kids are, you know, teenagers, if not more. And you've got this period of your life. And if we break up our life into, you know, from 80 into four quarters, you've got first 20, second 20, and now we're into this third 20, which is traditionally where a lot of people really make their most headway in life, is in their 40s, particularly around business. And I just think that that's a time where a lot of people get to a place in their world and go, and, you know, you mentioned before about transitioning out of the business. You're already starting to think in the mid 40s, so you got 10, 15 years. Mm. What am I going to do with this business? Am I going to sell it? Am I going to keep on growing? Am I going to hand it over to someone else? And what it does is it gets you start to think about, you know, reconsolidating where you are, recalibrating and potentially reorganizing where you want to go. So it's an interesting time. You couple that with how we show up in our human behavior around all that. Some people sail through it, but I've found that a lot of business owners in this 40-year phase, particularly as leaders, they struggle.
What's your experience? What are they struggling with? And you talked about before that they, you know, you didn't have the foundation. What, yeah, if you were to look back on that, what would be the foundation you would place?
Yeah, good question. So the best foundation that you could get is that personal development foundation of who you are centered, knowing exactly what you want, what your vision is, where you're going. And I'm talking more so lower end, you know, small to medium sized business owners here who, you know, have gone through a pathway of being a technician, then they manage something, and then eventually maybe start their own business, and all of a sudden they've got a leadership badge and they've got to drive this, this business to where it is they want to go in their world. So the challenges from a, you know, having that foundation is just making sure financially you're solid, you've got a good vision, clarity of where you're going, you've got good people around you supporting you, and are you growing? What often happens is businesses grow at a faster pace than the person who's owning and driving the business. And there's a great saying that, you know, your business will never sustainably outgrow who you've become.
Yeah.
And so you need to grow. So for me, the foundational work is really about, you know, understanding who you are, becoming very self-aware of what it is you're trying to achieve. And obviously you're impacting people around you. And so it's this, I'm just fascinated with this 40-year-old journey that it seems to pop up quite a lot.
I've seen it before too. I've seen a group of people probably around that age from a development perspective. You know, they went and did a number of courses. They did a director's course. Yep. They then went and did a course on kind of financials for non-financial people. And because you're right, they'd end up in leadership roles. They'd either, the baton had been passed to them from their father or from their parents, or they thought of a role and all of a sudden they've got 15, 20 people around them. But they knew that technical aspect of it, the technician as you call it, but they had no concept of some of the foundational key elements of a business, i.e. know your freaking numbers. What do they mean? And how do you refine them?
No, it's interesting because I think there's the economic side of it and making sure that you've got a solid foundation that you're building. But then I often, you know, talk to people about, you know, leadership is peopleship.
Yeah.
That you really got to understand people from a leadership perspective. And this is even if you're a solo entrepreneur, right? You still got to be learn to lead yourself into where it is you want to go. So it doesn't just apply to big teams. And I think sometimes leadership gets discussed as, you know, I'm running a corporation that's got 2,000 people and I'm the leader and I've got these other leaders below me. But I would say that majority of business owners in Australia in particular, they're in that middle sort of, you know, 5 to 25 people organisation. And there's that still requires a high level of aptitude about learning about people and understanding what makes them thrive and how to get the best out of yourself and just think. And I just think that what happens is that there's a certain amount of will, determination, hard work, push through that gets you through your 30s, let's say. And then when you get into your 40s, you start to question, what is it am I doing? What am I trying to achieve?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where am I going with this thing?
I've got all this stock and I know how to sell it and I'm making a quid, but why am I peeing people off so often? Or you know,
yeah, yeah. And or you know, the other one is that happens a lot too, is that you know, you might have a level of success, whatever it is that it for you, but you're not happy, you're not enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know, the classic one is that the business ends up owning you, you don't own the business.
Yeah.
And it's these struggles that sort of seem to come to a point, and I'm saying, you know, 40s, it could be late 40s, early into 50s. And what I've discovered through my, you know, studies around human behaviors depends on what happens to you in those first, you know, from when you leave school, sort of that first 15 years out of that, either sets you up to be well placed in your 40s and beyond, or you run into a brick wall. And when I say brick wall, I'm not talking about, you know, you're going to fall off the face of the planet here. I'm talking about, you know, just are you getting what you set out to achieve? And is this the business life that you really want?
Mm.
And so it's this questioning. And so what I'm really keen about doing is helping people navigate that passage of their life, if you like.
Yeah. We use three words often, which is connect, understand, influence. And the idea there is, you know, you've got to be able to connect with people first. We've swapped that around sometimes. You've got to try and understand people first. Once you understand them, then you can connect with them. And it's only when you truly connect with them, then can you have some kind of level of influence around what you want them to do in your business. So yes, we really see that as a three, you know, fairly easy steps to do that. So tell me about, you know, we totally agree with you at Human Interactions around people being, you know, probably the most underutilized asset in a business.
Yeah.
We also have a fundamental belief that the more you understand about your people, the more you'll get from your people. What have you discovered about understanding people? What are some key things that drop out for leaders to start contemplating, am I doing this or am I not doing this?
Yeah, good question. So one of the first things that comes to mind is that, you know, probably the number one skill I believe in business is self-awareness, becoming really clear about who you are, how you're getting your current results, why you're getting your current results, why you're not getting your results that you want. And I think what happens is, particularly in leadership roles, is people spend a lot of time trying to figure everybody else out before they figure out themselves.
Mm.
And what I've learned through my own journey and the ones that I'm helping people through is that when you start to inwardly reflect and become very self-aware of who you are and understand your own human behavior and what's driving it, you start to see the people around you completely clear and a better thing. So it's an inward-out journey versus what most people tend to look at is an outward in journey to try and figure out everybody else around them, manage those, get those people into the right place, lead them. But often themselves, they're not taking care of and not understanding. So that's one thing. That there's also two parts to self-awareness. There's internal self-awareness of who you are, and then there's external self-awareness is what's your experience of the other. Sorry, what's the other people's experience of you as a leader? And you need to be really aware of how you're impacting the people around you. And I think this is just, you know, we talk about this as personal development. I like to call it as psychological development, because that's what's actually happening is as you grow, you are thinking differently about how you get what you get. And so when you think about it, when you're 25 versus 35 versus 45 versus 55, you develop psychologically to see things differently than what you did. Mm. And if you're not paying attention to that and you're trying to manage people around you, particularly from a leadership perspective, you're going to trip over. And understanding the core of what motivates people, what is it that, you know, I'm not talking about me, I'm talking about, you know, everybody. We all have these three innate traits that we're trying to achieve at any time. And it's, you know, born out in a thing called self-determination theory, which was a couple of psychologists back in the 85 sort of come up with this theory. And it's really, really important around leadership and understanding yourself and understanding the people around you. And those three things are: people want autonomy, they want control of where they're going, they want to feel competent and knowing what they're doing. And the other one is the sense of belonging, which obviously comes up.
Yeah.
And the sense of belonging is the one that's the most powerful overall.
Yeah,
if you can create an environment that has got a sense of belonging by empowering people to achieve their control in their life, and they feel competent and confident about what they're doing, you've now got someone that's working for you and not working against you in a business situation. And I think, to me, that's true leadership, is really understanding the people, yourself first. If you can't lead yourself, you generally can't lead anybody else. And then it sort of flows on from there. So yeah, I think the, you know, working on yourself is the starting point.
And have you seen or used any diagnostic tools to become aware of you know, where you're at as a person? I know, like, we use DISC all the time. We find DISC to be incredibly reliable and an incredibly valid tool. And they have an emotional intelligence, because self-awareness is one of the emotional intelligence steps that Daniel Goleman talks about. Yep. But is that a tool that you've used in the past, or have you used other stuff?
Yeah, I have. I've actually, you know, used it myself on myself very early on, and I found it interesting. I think, you know, the challenge, Craig, with those tools is that everybody's individual, every circumstance is different, every situation is different. So it's, you know, it's hard to use that tool broad, but sometimes you can get an analysis from one of those tools, which are very effective and very accurate, but it can also, depending on the state of the mind of the person who's getting that, can actually shift them to thinking differently than what they perceive themselves to be. So I think it's interesting is that, you know, sometimes we overcomplicate these things.
Yeah.
We sort of need to dumb it down a little bit and bring it to, you know, some core things that, you know, I've got my own models that I use and sort of to help people evolve and understand what it is. And you know, the first one is a very simple one, is just, you know, the acronym of HAT, H-A-T, and that is that, you know, there's a hidden achievement triangle. There's three things that I help people evolve through. And these three things, you've already touched on one today, is that, you know, it's focus, connection, and courage. What I've come to understand in working with a lot of people is that, and I'm convinced of this now, is that every challenge that we face in business and in human interactions in itself, and all the solutions, have either an origin or a pathway through one of those three things, or potentially a combination of those three things. Mm. So if you're stuck in a place in your business, it's going to be one of those three things. It's going to be a focus problem, which is quite broad. You know, are you focused on the right thing at the right time based on where you're at on your business journey?
Yeah.
Or are you not? You know, are you connecting with yourself, which is that self-awareness? Are you connecting with the people? Are you connecting with your marketplace? Are you connecting with the vision that you actually have set out? Do you even have a vision? And then at the bottom of that triangle is courage. Courage is the determinant that shifts you from wherever it is to where it is you want to go. There's got to be a level of courage that we've got to break through. And there's two parts to that, which is, you know, courage that we see as, you know, jumping out of an aeroplane with a parachute, that's courageous. But then how you showing up in your behaviours, there's courageous behaviours and then there's non-courageous, or what I call disempowering behaviours or empowering behaviours. And they show up in leadership all the time. So from a diagnostic situation, it's like just having a conversation around where your behaviours sit, and, you know, use this model, which is sort of above and below the line of courage. Are you spending most of your time below, or are you spending time above? And that gives you a snapshot to become really self-aware of how am I showing up and how am I getting the results. And most of the time when you are sitting below that line of courage regularly, you're disempowering, you're moving away from whatever it is you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And when you are above that line of courage, you're generally empowering yourself and moving you towards whatever it is you want to achieve. And each journey is individual.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, like, as you know, our background is organizational development. So, you know, when you're looking at that, one of the key things is to do some kind of analysis before you do any implementation. So whether it's a DISC or whether it's the model that you've chosen before, I've looked at that model. It's quite interesting, the behaviors, because I think the above the line, the key behavior was trust, if I remember rightly, and then the one below the line was fear, and you can. You know, you can simplify that all you want, but ultimately if you don't have people who trust you and they fear you, then you've got two very different workplaces, right?
Totally. And I think the interesting thing about trust, which need, you know, a lot of people understand this and it's worth discussing, particularly in leadership circles, is the trust is what shows up when you feel safe. So if you've got a leadership style that makes the people around you feel safe, they'll display trust towards that, and they'll move towards you, because, you know, from a psychological development perspective, we all trying to get safety in our world. That's our primary driver.
Yes. Yeah.
So trust shows up above the line in that you're making the people around you feel safe, and then they display trust as that thing. Whereas fear, the reason people fear situation, circumstance, because they don't trust, they don't feel unsafe about what the circumstance, and that shows up as fear. So, you don't feel safe about making a decision, so you don't do it, and then you get fearful around it. So So you're right, is that the dominant behavior below the line of courage is fear, and obviously the antidote to fear is courage. And the dominant behavior above is trusting, which is getting people to feel safe. So, we often hear this in leadership circles about, you've got to create a safe environment for people to be able to stand up and say what they want to say, and, give them the strength to be able to come up with ideas and not be dictatorial about how you're going to drive your vision of your business.
Mm.
I've listened to, even on this podcast, I've listened to quite a few of the others, and it comes up as a theme quite regularly to good leaders that that's what they're doing. And what they're doing is they're creating a safe environment which people then trust in you and the situation and the business, and they'll flourish from that.
It's interesting because, if I'm overanalyzing something here perhaps, but the concept of fear and trust seems so far apart. It would be great if they're a little, I'm just doing a little bit too much fear. If I change a little bit, I'm closer to trust. But it does feel such a big step to move from an environment of fear to moving to an environment of trust. It feels like there's a fair bit of work that's required. Again, you need self-awareness, of course. But
And I think if you, do the work and you understand what's creating the fear and what are the emotional drivers that is creating that, and if you maybe look at it through a lens of, well, fear is another way of saying I feel unsafe.
Mm.
And then you go, well, what is it that I feel unsafe about? And most of the time when you have that conversation, by the way, 80% of our conversations are with ourselves. And we have this because safety is our major driver, is that we tend to look at things in a fearful way, or we feel unsafe, and that's our primary driver. So this is where the self-awareness really kicks in, and why it's so important is that understanding the way you think and how you can move yourself out of that and catch yourself when you're doing that, and you're not overthinking and you're not predicting bad outcomes, which creates stress and anxiety, and away it goes, whereas if you're, and with that map of courage that I shared with you, which is what I use as a tool for people to understand where they're at, there are a list of behaviours which everybody would aware of them, being grateful, empathetic, compassionate, taking responsibility, being accepting. They're not like hard things to do, but if your mind isn't moving towards them, you're not thinking about them, you're not going to, you're not going to do them.
And are you happy we share that on the podcast notes?
Totally, yeah, yeah.
I'll PDF it and we'll put it up on there for people to see.
I think
see
it's
that.
Probably worth, I don't know if you got a minute, we can just describe where that came from. It's like that.
Yeah,
that
sure, go for it quickly.
Yeah, that was an adaptation from a psychiatrist called David Hawkins, who did a 30-year study around this, and it was published all in a book called Power versus Force.
All right.
And he mapped out people's behaviors and how they showed up and what they did in their life and how that got them whatever it is they were trying to achieve. And this study, he called it a map of consciousness, so actually how we think and how we when we're in our waking hours.
Yeah.
And what he found that, and he calibrated all this from zero, say shame being probably at zero or 20 calibrated, up to 1,000 enlightenment. And the courage was calibrated at 200. So the deduction from that is that when you behave below that line of courage, it's disempowering you and taking you away from where it is that you're trying to get to. Mm. And when you consistently behave above that line of courage and moving, you're going to move towards whatever you're empowering to try and achieve. So it's a little bit deep, but the point is that it's the behaviors that he talks about, which I've mapped out in my model, is very easy for people to identify with. And what he also, which is a couple of things to note out of this study, was that he found that 85% of the world's population consistently live below the line of courage. and only 10 to 15% live consistently above.
Wow.
Which means that, and if you relate that into the business world, and maybe the business world might be a bit better than that because we're supposed to be a little bit more proactive, but I think human nature is human nature and experience is what it is that means 10 to 15% of the population are really only ones that are getting what they're setting out to achieve.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot of people that are not. And it's simply borne down to, are you behaving consistently below this line of courage, which, you know, below the line of courage for guys that are listening there, just to give them perspective, is things like, you know, we talk about fear, but, you know, blame, guilt, shame, being vindictive, in denial, antagonistic behavior, being apathetic, withdrawing, complaining. These are all behaviors that sit below it. And I mean, everybody can relate to complaining and blaming else for where they're at. We all do it. So the thing here, Craig, to understand is it's not about being above the line 100% of the time, because that's impossible. The work is, and this is where the self-awareness comes in, I think it's a really good tool, is that when you are below the line, to catch yourself maybe 10 minutes or an hour and not be there for a day, a month, a week, for long periods of time, which a lot of people, and if you're in business and you know leadership lives above the line of courage, it doesn't live below. It's like complaining and blaming and guilting and shaming people.
So when you think about this model, and it's great, and you know, you're coaching people, that's fantastic. But let's throw out a challenge for a minute. You're still a business owner, you're running a, you know, is it commercial real estate?
It's commercial real estate company.
Yeah, so you're still running commercial real estate. You said it's running well.
Yeah.
Is that because you're not running it in there day to day and you've got somebody that's more self-aware?
Someone would probably say that, yeah.
Sorry, that was a bit rude.
No.
But do you know what I mean? Like, it's very, you know, they say there's those that know and there's those that teach. But how have you implemented or changed your own behavior in your business, knowing this information? Because I think that's the bread and butter for people to eat.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the interesting thing is that when you get to know this stuff well, you see it all around you, right? So if you just, and I'll answer your question, but I'll just go back to go forward a bit, because I think it's important that. If you go by David Hawkins' 30-year study and he's saying 85% of the people live below the line of courage, you don't have to go far looking for this.
Right? Yeah, right. Yeah.
You see it in your staff and the people around you, in yourself, in your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, everybody, right?
Sure.
And so when you get to understand this whole process and you start to see it come up in your world, it's easy to identify and to help people through the process. And like, you know, the best way to learn something is to teach someone, right? So the more you teach someone else, the more it embeds in what you're doing, which is sort of the reason why, one of the reasons I wanted to go down the coaching path, because part of doing that starting 5-odd years ago or thinking about it was to help me continue on this pathway of growth that I was going, to really utilize these methods and these processes that I put into place. And so I've got my own little human experience with my own business, but now sharing it with a whole lot of other business owners. And of all the things that I, you know, we talk about in business development and growth, this is the thing that people identify with straight away. It's because everybody knows, if they're truthful, their own behaviors. And the interesting thing about, Craig, is that when you show this and you have a conversation with someone about it, the immediate response is, I think I spend most of my time above the line of courage. I don't spend much time. Everybody's in denial around that, right? And then within about 10 to 15 minutes, they go, okay, well, let's unpack this. Tell me about this. Tell me about that. And usually at the end of about 20 minutes, they go, actually, I'm a fair bit below the line of courage and not too much, and I need to shift. But what it does, and then we go through this process of, okay, tell us about your day-to-day stuff. And you say, you go back to my business. I mean, I've got 7 staff. It's not a huge business, but I've got 7 staff, and we talk about this sort of stuff, and we help people through, and it creates a better environment as well, because now you've got people that are working together in, you know, common way and understanding each other. And you know, I believe that, you know, the more you learn about yourself, the more you learn around the people around you, and that's, so this tool helps me do that in my little real estate company, but it's impactful with larger businesses as well. But the starting point is yourself. It's really understand, are you empowered moving it to where you want to go, or are you disempowering yourself? And of course, you know, in the environment that we live in at the moment, with COVID and everything else, it's quite easy to get into the blame, the complaining, the shift to someone else's fault. It's outside of who you are. So
what's the one behavior that comes up all the time for you? Like, what's the one that you go, oh, I'm below the line, I've got to do this? Are you willing to share that?
Yeah. Well, for me, I suppose the better way to frame that question is that, you know, when I was going through my struggles 10 plus years ago, when I was working through, and this is now identifying, looking back, and now I see this regularly in other business owners, is withdrawal. So is when we get into struggle in businesses, or any struggle for that matter, but the first, you know, safety mechanism is to withdraw from the situation or circumstance and pull away.
Yeah.
And because you're worried of the decision you're going to make is not going to work out. That's what's that fear mechanism, and that's that chatter in your mind.
Yeah.
So I see this a lot, is withdrawal, and that was definitely for me. I was withdrawing from the GFC at the time, was in denial, was trying to push it away. This will all go away. I'll be fine.
Yes.
And you withdraw. So then what happens is then as things don't work out, you get stressful, you get anxiety. And then when you're in that state of mind, you know, your prefrontal cortex starts to shut down, you don't make good decisions, and you know, sort of actually then implodes a little bit. So I've found a lot of clients that I'm talking to, this is their biggest issue, is they withdraw from, particularly if it's a difficult circumstance, conversation they don't really want to have.
Yeah.
All those types of things.
Not a great leadership skill.
No, not it is. No, exactly.
Could you imagine if leaders did that through, you know, this beginning of shutdowns and COVID, you know, I saw some businesses do exactly the opposite, not withdraw, stood up, were courageous,
yes,
said the things that they needed to say, as much as they scared the people out of their wits, but they were things that they had to say and tell people. Otherwise, they were, you know, essentially not telling the truth at all. So it'd be very easy to withdraw.
I agree. I think that, you know, we're seeing now the businesses that are probably have survived and thrived through this last couple of years are the ones that actually didn't withdraw and go, right, here's a circumstance situation. So above the line,
yes,
let's take responsibility. Let's accept where we're at. Let's not blame anybody else. Let's not wait for the cavalry to come and save us.
Mm.
What do we need to do, right? So they're intentional, which is an above the line of courage behavior. Let's get intentional about what we're doing. The businesses that went, well, let's wait and see, let's collect the JobKeeper and let's just hope this all goes away in 12 months, they're the ones that, and it's their mindset that has driven them to go that way through this withdrawal process. And hope, and then, you know, what happens in that withdrawal process, you start complaining and blaming other people for your circumstance. So it's interesting that once you get into that below the line of courage, other traits of that then feed in, because one of the other lots of good things that come out of that book, and I'd highly recommend anybody who's interested in this to read that book, Power Versus Force, David Hawkins, I think it was written in 95 from memory. And there's lots of really great information that comes out of it. You know, and it depends on, you know, what you believe as well. But what happens is, and he talks a lot about in the book, is that when you're living below the line of courage, you create energy fields around you that attract more of that. And when you live above the line of courage and you're empathetic, compassionate, you're taking responsibility, you're accepting of where your situation is and a whole lot of other traits, you create that energy and it empowers you and people want to deal with you and enjoy. So even from a simple case of how do I get more people to engage with who I am, if you shifted and you understood, and you maybe the work, and this is the work that I do, as I say to someone, well, let's categorize this. Let's go, at the moment, shall we say you're 30%? Above and 70% below, how do we shift that to 60-40? How do we get that to 50-50? How do we get that? In other words, it's not learn this in a minute and go, right, we're good to go, right? This changes, this takes time. And, you know, I
think too, you've got to be a person who's willing to accept, for use of a word, your weaknesses, your faults, or whatever it is. And there's a lot of people put on a brave face, and I think it's those that are willing to be vulnerable, who are willing to do some personal development or psychological development and go, I'm not perfect. I do some good stuff,
yeah,
but there's stuff that I still need to work on, and not to be too, you know, corny, but, I do have a journey that I have to go through. It's about kind of enjoying life for what it is, not having to be successful every day of the week.
No, exactly. And I think, you know, but that, you know, it depends on who you ask, but I think that's unsustainable anyway. And
no, I agree. Totally agree. Goal,
you know, there's, you know, you can only see the light when you've been through the dark type scenario in that, and sometimes you need to go through that. I mean, yeah. Look, you know, and everybody's, this is again coming back to Craig's, everybody's journey is different, and it just, this is more about just awareness and then acceptance of, and like you said, if you want to become a little bit vulnerable, and by the way, vulnerable is one of the above the line dominant behaviors that the more you become vulnerable, the clearer the pathway of courage comes in to show you where you need to go. And it's the people who, you know, particularly as a leader, we'll talk about from a leadership perspective, if you're not a vulnerable leader and you're prepared to say, hey, I haven't got this right, or who can help me to get where it is, and you're constantly trying to tell people what to do all the time, and you don't empower them to achieve, you're not going to create the energy around you that they're going to want to work for you and help you to get whatever the vision it is. You're actually going to be counterproductive and work against you.
And so if you were, I ask this question all the time, and this will probably close it off for us given our time. If you were mentoring, so not coaching, but if you were mentoring, a young leader or manager, what would be two or three key statements you would tell them? You don't have to explain them, but what would be two or three things that you would tell them?
I think the starting point when I've talked to young leaders or, you know, leaders in general, is to really start understanding the difference between management and leadership.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that's a pathway. So what ends up happening, I'll explain a little bit if I could, because it doesn't make sense otherwise, is that, you know, a lot of people end up in leadership roles just by virtue of they're the last one standing, you got the job, right?
Yeah.
And we hear this a lot in a lot of people's story, particularly really good leaders. They'll often have a story. They go, when I was 25, I got thrust into this place and I didn't know what I was doing, but I got the badge and it said leader, right? But what they immediately go in to do is, okay, I've got some technical ability and I'm just going to manage everybody. And I love Jim Collins, which is another great author and work about this. You know, he says, you know, the difference between the two is our managers are timekeepers and leaders are clock makers.
Yeah, nice.
Right. So managers are timekeepers to make sure people are in the right place at the right time, doing the right job efficiently as quickly as possible. Leaders are ones where they show people to make a clock so that they can figure it out on their own and empower themselves to move forward and achieve what it is they want to achieve. And I love that distinction because it's so just, you know, that's probably one of the core things is to give advice to young leaders and any leader for that matter, is to really, are you a manager or are you a leader, and understand what that is.
Yeah.
Probably the other thing is to go back to that self-awareness of becoming who you are and what's driving you, and having external self-awareness as well, is how are you impacting the people around you and what's their experience? Because I can guarantee one thing is your experience of your leadership style is not the experience of the people that are around you. Everybody has a different experience of the same thing, but what we tend to do is we see it through our own eyes and we don't see it through anybody else's eyes. And probably the last thing I'd say, which is more of a quote around this than and then maybe something for people to chew on, is that there's a great saying, is that we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are, right? So we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are. So we view every circumstance, situation through our own subjective reality.
Yeah.
But to become a good leader and to actually become a better human being, I believe you start to become a little bit more objective and start seeing that maybe the way you're seeing it is not the way as everybody else seen it. And when you do that, you start to get a clearer picture of what's going on around you. And I believe you can lead better. You know, touched on my real estate career, you know, I've negotiated lots of properties over time. And that's when I made that shift to understand that I'm seeing it through my eyes and I'm not seeing it through the other person's eyes, the world changed. You know, it completely changed in that whole negotiating process. And, you know, some would argue that in business you're consistently negotiating every day, all day, on every circumstance. So it's
absolutely,
so I'd say those three things.
Understand, connect, then influence. Tarun, look, thank you for your time. I think we could have probably spoken for another half an hour, but I do keep this to a a time good. Limit. So people are out for a walk or driving to work or so on and so forth. So we'll put on the notes where they can contact you if they want a bit of coaching, especially if they're in WA.
So
we'll get that up over the next week or so. We'll get this episode up. So thank you so much for your time and your insights and talking to us about the above the line and the below the line with courage. I like it. It's awesome.
Yeah, cool. Excellent. Thanks, Craig. Appreciate the opportunity, mate.
Thanks so much.